Hello and welcome to another episode of Season of the Witch with your hosts Rowan Oaken and Tess Lauren, the show where we spill some tea on the occult and read the leaves to filth. How are you?
I'm good, yeah. I'm fresh.
Fresh? As in like, I'm just out the shower and not just like feeling fly. Just like...
I mean, I can pretend I'm feeling fly. That's good.
You don't have to. You don't have to pretend anything on this podcast. No, that's not what this is for.
I've been going through the trials and tribulations of having multiple existential crises lately, but yeah.
I feel you.
Yeah. It's that almost 30 vibe, you know?
The Saturn return. We were talking about that, whether that should be an episode. Yeah, how are you feeling with Saturn return? Are you hating it? Are you loathing Saturn?
It's a fucking dumpster fire, mate.
Yeah. It's to be expected. Just, I think it's about riding the, like, being on top of the dumpster and riding down the hill and just being part of the flaming dumpster and just embracing it, you know?
Become one with the flaming dumpster.
Become one with it. But then rise from the ashes, like almost said eagle. Phoenix. The mythical bird. Yes.
The eagle. I love that.
I feel like that's the point. That's the point of the Saturn return.
Yeah. I thought when I turned 29 that was it.
No.
Like the stuff that I was discovering as I was 29 and coming into 29. No. And then I was doing some research on it because I'm just like not feeling like it's ending. And someone was like, yeah, mine went on for like 4 years. And I was like,
Yeah. I heard like two to three years is quite typical. For a there you go. There you go.
We'll have a whole episode on it, but I'm curious. Was yours okay?
No.
All right, sweet. Good to know.
Like on the episode that I did I did kind of different planetary returns. I should link what episode that is. I can't remember. And I looked at different like Mercury returns and Venus returns, and in terms of the Saturn return, it was one of the most disruptive parts of my life. Just in terms of I left a really crap job, completely changed my career path. After paying to train for it at university and you know, going back to university to train for this job, left this career, adopted my son, moved into a house. Like it was everything everywhere all at once. Boom, boom, boom. It was very typical Saturn return. Very disruptive. But now everything's wonderful. Everything's on a straight and narrow path. He lies.
I love the confidence in that.
I think moving into your 30s is just about general disruption and discontent, existential crisis. Where am I going? Why am I going? What is happening with my life?
I told my husband the other day, I was like, 30, I'm going to peak in my 30s. I was like, that's it. I'm going to be a hot bitch in my 30s. That's my goal.
Nice goal.
Yeah.
See, my husband had this whole thing of like the 30 body. He'd got it in his, someone had told him at some point that the body that you have in your 30s is like the body that you will have for the next however many 20 years, which is just total like bro science bullshit.
Bro science.
So he got it into his head that he had to like, he was in at the gym every day trying to like work on this 30 body. And he did. He achieved a very fantastical body for his 30s. And I, on the other hand, just rolled in it, just boozing and snoozing. And I was like, you know, it is what it is.
Fucking love that. What a vibe. The contrast. Yeah. The dichotomy between the two is beautiful, really.
I actually went to a beer festival on my birthday and was like, fuck it!
Yes!
Yeah.
Oh,
so
my God.
That's the difference there. So you've got a 30 body to contend with, according to my husband, so...
Wow. Bring it, bitch.
Bring it, bitch. Get boozing and snoozing. So that's exactly. But besides that, I haven't got much else to report on. I feel like it's a continued existential crisis in your 30s.
Nice.
Right? I felt like I tried to like shake things up quite recently with my creative writing, and I was like, I'm gonna go back to school for creative writing, and I was really excited about that. And I then had the problem of my work were kind of pushing me down another route, an academic route. And I was like, no, I'm going to be creative. And I applied for two programs, one that was creative and one that was an academic route. And I was like, which one will I choose, though? Which one will I choose? Will I go the creative route and will I go the academic route? And I got my reply from Glasgow University yesterday and they rejected my portfolio. And I was like, fuck! Here I was thinking I...
It's okay. It's the universe telling you it's fine. Yes. It'll be okay. Yeah. You know, you move on to greater, bigger things, dude. Don't worry.
But like there I was, the ego of me, not even for a moment considering that I would not be accepted onto the program.
You know what it is?
My big fat
ego. It's the mullet.
Look, see, it's going strong. Mullet.
Honestly, I'm living for it. I can't wait till it grows out. Looking great.
Well, it kind of won't. I think it will poof out.
That's even better.
Is it, though? Is it?
Yeah.
I'm going to have like a trapeze hair. I feel like that's what it's... Is that a style? Is that a thing? Is that a moment? Dude. So... wait, what are we talking about today? It wasn't trapeze hair. It wasn't failing getting into courses.
Summer solstice.
Solstice. Did you do anything for the solstice?
I cut my borage.
Cut my borage. That sounds like a filthy euphemism.
Oh my god, no, yeah, I cut my borage and I dried some and then I made a tea.
Nice.
That was my
a borage tea.
A borage tea, yeah.
What does that do? What's that going to do for me?
Well, I use it for an antidepressant. I use it for cheering myself up because it tastes like cucumbers. It's really good. You can use the leaves and the flowers. Yeah, it's really good.
I feel like I know it, but I don't.
You will. It's the star flower, bees flower. Everybody knows borage.
Everybody
knows borage.
Pick
up the Googles. You got it.
The power of Google. And it tastes like a cucumber. So it's got these beautiful little delicate blue flowers. I recognize more the leaves, actually. They're kind of big, thick, furry leaves.
They're furry and they're sticky. Yeah.
So which bit do you forage for?
The whole thing. Minus the root. Thing. You can use the root for things, but the flowers and the leaves and the stems and everything, you can eat the whole thing. I'd say eat it. You can drink it. I wouldn't recommend eating it. It doesn't taste great. But yeah, it literally, when you make a tea out of it, it's actually quite pleasant. You can add sugar to it and stuff too, but it tastes like cucumber. It's like refreshing cucumber.
Grab some borage because I always go to St. John's Wort, which was one that I said I was interested in talking about today in terms of antidepressant properties, because I feel like that is like the go-to. It is the go-to, I suppose, in terms of medical trial.
With caution.
Yes, with caution. Yeah, and making sure you're not taking it with anything else.
Yeah, some contraindications, bro.
Yes. Yes, I suppose that should be a disclaimer. Don't die.
Yeah. Please don't.
Yeah, just, you know, be mindful of allergies. Consult a doctor. Do you think anyone actually does that? Does anyone go, I'm gonna sip on some borage? Does anyone contact
their doctor? First, I should call my doctor. No, I've never done that.
Hello, doctor. I'm gonna make a borage tea.
Do as I say, not as I do, my friends.
Absolutely. Borage tea, do you use it for any kind of magical purposes or just medicinal?
I use it in my magical practice, but it's not really. It's really hard. Like, I always talk in this show, like, about my herbalism, and people always ask me about, like, magical herbalism, but I know more about medical herbalism than I do magical. And it's interesting, like, with my craft and, like, my practice, like, they kind of intertwine together. So, like, if I'm using it in a tea at my altar because I'm not feeling great and I'm really low, that's magic in itself, right? So a lot of the time we're using those like associations. I don't really follow associations for my herbs. What I do with them medically, a lot of the time overlaps with what I do magically. So when someone's like, hey, what is the magical properties of, like, I don't know, sage, or, well, that's easy, but like sweetgrass or something, yeah. I'd be like, I don't know, I burn it.
Well, I think a lot of those things, in terms of magical properties, it's all about intention.
It is, yeah.
If we're saying kind of for you, Borage is all about, lifting your mood, then kind of working with that energy of raising energy, lifting mood energy. I would assume assumptions. In terms of the solstice this year, I just made an alcoholic beverage. I sent you a picture.
I saw that. That was so cute. Your cocktail. I wanted that. I wanted to jump through my WhatsApp and steal your cocktail.
A well dressed. I should pop that on Instagram because it was.
You really should. Why didn't you, bro?
I know. Like I'm shit at Instagram. I'm shit at social media now. Like people are contacting me.
I'm trying. Oh, every time I try, I'm just like, why? Why am I doing this to myself?
But it was.
But also, no. Go ahead. Sorry.
I was just gonna carry on talking about my cocktail because I was quite impressed with it. That had St. John's wort in it, and orange and clove, all the sunny things, and it was made with a not pomegranate. It was a poncha, like a liquor, passion fruit. Passion fruit. Ooh. How
good. I've got that growing in my garden this year.
Again. Passion fruit?
Yeah. Passion flower, which turns into passion fruit.
No, it doesn't, does it?
Yeah. What? Are you? Yeah? Are you okay? You didn't know that?
No.
The passion fruit, bro. Oh, where do you think it comes from?
Well, I thought it came from a passion fruit tree. I don't know. I'm not a botanist.
No, mate. No. Yeah. Oh. Yeah, oh. It comes from passion flower.
Oh, that's
the viney. Yeah.
Shit. Okay, well, I'm going to go out and get myself some passion flower now. Because you can... Passion flower is another one that's really good for mood, is it? Not?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yes. So you can use the flowers and the stems and dry it, and it lifts your mood, helps with anxiety and depression.
Yes.
What I use it for.
Yes.
I feel like half of my herbal cabinet is just things for sadness. Like, oh, Tess, what's that for? Sadness, what's that for? Anxiety, what's that for? Depression, what's that for? Mood lifting. Like, okay, right?
You're okay, Tess. You're okay.
Yeah, you're okay. You're right. Oh, my God. I think when you suffer from mental health, though, that's like, you know, if you are a herbalist or you use herbs and you suffer from mental health, 90% of your cabinet is going to be filled with things for mental health, guaranteed. Yeah. So I'm not alone. I know I'm not alone.
The thing that I probably need to discover more of is things that are good for chest infections. As an asthmatic, I get chest infections all of the time. All of the time.
Warming herbs are really good for chest infections. Actually, mugwort.
Mugwort? For a chest, yeah. I know of it from like a cardiovascular sense. So I suppose that all adds up.
Yeah. And it's a diaphoretic herb as well.
And for the listeners, a diaphoretic is?
That's a good question. How do I explain that without sounding like a loser? It helps you sweat.
Yeah. Gets the shit out.
It gets the shit out of your system. It helps you sweat. I can't think of like, I'm trying to like be non-medical about it.
I think that it works. I'm buying that explanation.
It helps you sweat out all the gross things.
Yeah.
Because it's a warming herb. So it like heats up your body and you're like, it gets your blood flowing and that helps you sweat. And that's the word. Diaphoretic.
Get the dirty crap out your body. Nice.
Mm.
I'm trying to think, what else was in the cocktail? Lemonade and some pansies as well. just because they're pretty, you know? Just pretty.
Mm-hmm. It was really, really pretty. It looked really good. You should come all the way from Kent over to Bournemouth and make me cocktails.
Here's a cocktail and then just leave.
Yeah.
But that has become like the new way that I seem to be celebrating Sabbaths is mostly just through alcohol. I think I'm
Do
just...
You know I'm going to plug for a minute. Do you know the Magical Cocktails book?
I have heard of, but not bought.
You need it. You need it in your life, bro. No, but I need it too.
I need it. I didn't even make a fire this year. I would normally sit out by the fire and If I'm going to be completely honest, I was quite hungry and I was like, I want to go in and make food now. But the summer solstice is one that I just don't feel that I celebrate much. I feel...
This is weird because you're like this, you're the sun man. Your whole magical practice is to do with the sun, right?
Absolutely. So I don't know what's going on there. I think some part of it I find is quite mournful. I don't know. I see the summer solstice as, oh no, it's getting dark now.
That's...
Glass half full. I know.
But no, it's so true though, because like the summer solstice is the longest day of the year and then it gets darker. So that makes sense. That totally makes sense.
Yeah.
I think living in England, it's very difficult because like I explain this to people who, my family back in Canada, and they're like, oh, what's the weather like? And I'm like, well, it's miserable 90% of the time. And then you get like a lick of sunshine and it's hotter than Satan's ass. And then you like don't want to do anything because you've gone from it being gloomy and rainy to so hot you can't function.
Yeah.
So like there's no in between. And so like, and then everybody, when it's sunny out in England, because I live in a beach town, everybody flocks to the beach. You know what I mean? Like it gets busy and like you just don't want to do anything. Like summer in England, in the south of England specifically, is very meh. Yeah.
And England's not made for it either. Our buildings are not made. We don't have air conditioning.
Oh my god! Yeah. To all North American listeners, get this. England doesn't have air conditioning and it fucks me off so hard. Like, I don't understand. You see these like contraptions that people, like these tubes that they have out their windows of these like little air con machines. And I'm like, oh my God. And then the houses here are brick, people. So it's like insulates all the heat. It doesn't keep the heat in winter and you freeze to death. And then in the summertime, you're sweating so much you can't handle it.
Like I do all my work from home pretty much all the time now, and I work in the attic room, and the ceiling, which I can touch just here, is boiling hot in the summer. Hot, it feels like I'm being baked alive in this room. Maybe that's why I don't like it so much. Boo-hoo on the summer solstice. No, I love the heat. I love the heat, actually. I shouldn't be mean on the heat. I love the sun. But yeah, the feeling that, oh no, it's getting darker now, and I know that I'm slipping into the darker half of the year, and I know that I really struggle with the darker half of the year. So I feel like I'm grasping at as much of that daylight as possible. I feel more productive in the lighter half of the year because I can do more in the evening. I've got more energy. The sun gives me more energy, and knowing that I'm going into that, it scares me a little bit.
I get excited, and the reason I get excited, and I think you're gonna be like, oh wait, yeah, is because we're coming up to Mabon and we're coming up to Samhain, which is like where I thrive as a practitioner, and that is what I'm excited about. I know that when August hits, it's September, and then from September it's October, and baby, I'm living. So like
it starts me now in August. It really does. August is the get go. I'm like, it's Mabon now, basically. Like I'm fine, and it's not at all. Luna's up. But I just jump straight in at that point. You know, I see, you know, something like the chestnut tree starts losing all its leaves in August, and like that to me is a sign. That to me is a sign that I'm ready to go. I'm ready to
elderberries out. You're like, let's go.
I'm ready to be a motherfucking spooky bitch.
Yes.
We wanted to talk about some things that we're foraging at this time. This is the second foraging episode in our new foraging series, a season of the foragers. Things we're foraging at the moment. We've talked about both of the ones that we'd like to talk about today, St. John's Wort and Mugwort. I think I would like to jump in with St. John's Wort first.
Do it up.
And they're both warts.
That's your expertise.
Yes. The double warts as well. Okay. Warts all over. Warts for everyone. I remember thinking, like, what does the word wart mean? I thought it would mean more than the fact that it just means that it's like a herb.
Yeah, it does. That's literally it.
I remember thinking like, oh, it must mean like it does something, because most of the ones that end in a wart, you know, have some kind of property for the body, and it's just herb. And I was
just herb.
Really disappointed.
I know.
Thanks, Latin. So,
But which I'm going to get into it as well, so don't worry, you continue on.
Like I didn't know as well, like in terms of St. John's Wort, that the name comes because of the time of the year, the time of the year that it comes out. In terms of St. John and St. John's Day, I was like, oh, there we go, there we go.
That makes sense. I didn't even know that. Yeah. I've been doing this for years, so you learn something new every day.
Disseminating and sharing knowledge. And in terms of St. John's Wort, I think this is a question that I'd asked you a while ago as part of like the Hypericum family. Are they all consumable?
No.
No. And that is good. That is definitely good to know.
I was just like deadpan. No.
Don't die.
They're really not. And you really have to know, even when you're foraging, like this is one of the ones that when you go out to forage, you have to know what you're looking for. Do you know the indicators of looking for St. John's Wort? Do you know?
I feel like I just know it well enough because I grow it in my garden as well. So I feel like I just know it by sight.
It's a yellow flower. I think it's got, is it five? I can't remember now. I'm trying to think of what St. John's Wort looks like. Basically, you have to really make sure, because there's so many different subspecies of St. John's Wort, even in England, there's quite a few. So you really have to know what you're looking for. My recommendation, it is five. I thought so. So it's yellow. It's got five petals. It gets quite tall as well. St. John's Wort gets quite tall. And the biggest indicator is if you go up to it and you pinch between your fingers, they turn purple. And that's one of your biggest indicators that it's St. John's Wort, which I'm sure you know. But you have to be careful because the subspecies within the family is, there are not poisonous, but it can make you really, really ill. And it can have adverse effects on your body. So you really do have to be careful. My recommendation, Holland and Barrett. Yep. Like if you want St. John's Wort and you're unsure, because it's one of those, like, there's different levels of herbalism. You have beginner herbalism, intermediate, and then you have like more advanced. And I would say foraging St. John's Wort isn't more advanced herbalism, because there are so many subspecies of it. Yeah. Whereas like, I would say yarrow, for example, is very much a beginner herb to start with. Yeah. So be really careful with it. But if you really want to start using it for things like mental health, I would say maybe capsules or drops from Holland and Barrett or any health food store to start out with and see how you get along.
Much cheaper at a Tesco.
Really? I didn't know they sold it at Tesco.
True story. Yeah, I used to always get mine from Holland and Barrett, and now I go to Tesco. But now I grow it in the garden, so I don't do either of those.
I think we've discussed this before. How do you use it? Like, do you use it in a tea?
Yeah, at the moment, just dry it and then pop it in a tea. But I'm quite interested to think about putting, you know, kind of making a syrup out of it. But that's kind of what I've been getting in. I'm inspired by you with making syrups this year. I've made my first lavender syrup. The syrup queen, you sticky bitch. but yeah, do you think it would lose any of its properties in a syrup?
Yeah, because, well, actually it depends. It depends the way you make the syrup. If you do a warm to cold syrup, you're fine. And what I mean by that is you dissolve the sugar in water and then you let it cool completely. And then once it's cooled completely, you then add the herbs and let it sit in the fridge overnight or for 48 hours. And then that way the active constituents can seep into the cold sugar water in the fridge. Yeah. If you were to add any heat to it, that would kill the active constituents. And that happens with any herb. When you heat anything up, it loses its medical properties for sure.
Do you then strain the flowers out? Leave them in?
I would strain them out for St. John's Wort. Mm. Things like lavender, I don't bother.
No.
It depends, because some flowers hold their bitterness. Yeah. So for example, I've just made lilac syrup. This is a good example. So I love lilac syrup and I love lilacs. But the problem with lilac syrup is each of them has a little green stem on the flower and you have to actually take that green stem off because it's bitter. So there are different properties of the plant. So the flower itself probably would be fine, but if there were any bits of leaves or stem or twig or anything left over, that would make your syrup a lot bitter, more bitter. Yeah. So I would just take them out completely.
Yes.
So, you don't want to eat that.
It's one of those things. This makes me sound like such a capitalist now. like when I like I grow my own things and then I'm making my own things, I'm always like, oh, this is really nice, but this is really time consuming and sometimes boring. You know, even to the extent of like, you know, we grow all our own salad, and sometimes, you know, when I'm washing it and then I get like still get dirt in it, and then I'm like, oh, this wouldn't have happened if I'd got it from Tesco.
I think with that is like when you get into herbalism or foraging in herbalism specifically, in your witchcraft or as, you know, a medical practitioner, it's patience. And if anything, it's taught me how to be more patient as a person, because I never used to be. And herbalism has really slowed me down. If you want to start getting into slow living, I would recommend foraging, because it's one of those things where you really have to take your time with it. And it can be incredibly frustrating. Sometimes I'll be halfway through making something and I'm like, why the fuck did I do this to myself? Yeah. Because I'm like,
and well, even just the waiting, knowing that,
the season. Yeah,
I don't have that now for 6 months, and knowing that you've just got to wait for it to come around, or you could go and buy it. Yes, of course. But I do feel like there is something very different about sourcing something yourself. And it's interesting that you also mention the patience, but I also think, you know, foraging for your own things and also just being more aware of the natural environment.
Exactly. Yeah.
It shifts your perspective.
Exactly.
Like today, I was talking to you, I was like, oh, I'm dropping a parcel off. I parked up where I used to live when I went to university. So we're talking like 13, 14 years ago. And I walked past our old university house that we lived in. And there is, in the garden there, there's all this ivy growing in the garden. And there's this tree that I absolutely love. It's the sumac tree. I love a sumac tree, especially for its autumnal colour. And that, I had no idea that was growing in the front garden of our university accommodation. And it's huge, so there's no way it's just appeared overnight. So, but back then, I wasn't as in tune with my natural environment. Mm-hmm. And walking down that road, I just realised how much I was kind of blind to. I just wasn't being open and aware to. And I think something like foraging, you're constantly looking for the smallest of things. You're identifying things. You're being inquisitive. You're questioning. You're finding things out. I think it's not just good for, finding magical and medicinal properties, but I think in terms of that shift in your own perspective of the world, I found that's something that's really changed for me.
Yeah, I agree. It's definitely opened my eyes a lot more. And the things that I've discovered, not only about myself, but obviously about the things that are around me, my environment, it really does make you kind of like stop and look around and evaluate. And it's been really, the last couple of years, it's been really eye-opening for me. And it's definitely changed me as a person. And I really appreciate that. And especially where I live, I am lucky and able to just stop and have those. And now when I go out for a walk, it's not just, oh, I'm going for a walk. It's like I'm stopping every 5 minutes and I'm looking for stuff, or like I'm being more aware of what's around me. And we'll go for walks and I'll be like, oh, that's this. And oh, that's this. And oh, it's good to know that this is here. And I'm going to come back here later and I'm going to forage this. And so it does open your eyes a lot more, and you start to, exactly like the sumac tree, you start to notice things that you didn't notice before. Yeah. Like when I first moved here, I didn't know that there was a rowan tree outside my in-law's house. And then, and then it was a couple years ago where I was like, it was like autumn and the berries were out. And I was like, oh shit, that's a mountain ash. That's a rowan tree outside their house. And so you do, you start to notice things, which is great.
Yes. So still sticking with St. John's wort. Do you use it for any magical purposes other than medicinal antidepressant purposes, mood lifting?
I dried some last year, and I left it on my altar for, I think it was for midsummer, specifically, just kind of lighten the mood, just kind of bring some sunniness into my space. So that's probably what I would use it for, is like positivity and ridding negative energy.
Yes.
Mostly. But I don't actually use it medically as much. I know a lot of people that do. My friends do. You do. But I don't. It's not something that I get along with. I use different herbs.
Yes. I only use it in the winter, and then I don't use it
for the rest of
the year. Yeah.
That's totally fair. Because sad is a real thing, yo.
It is the real thing. There are sad bitches out here.
And we talked about, you actually mentioned that, like, how the seasons change, and, you know, like you can't get something for 6 months. So like now that I'm more of an advanced herbalist in regards to foraging, that is something that I think of. I think of the seasons, and I think of what I need to forage to collect to dry to have during winter, because that's a really difficult time for a lot of people, you know, seasonal affective disorder, like that's a huge thing. And so, especially for myself. So I know that I need my lemon balm, and I know I need my borage, and I know I need my, you know, my lavender and stuff like that. So that's stuff that I forage or take from my garden and bring inside. Mugwort again is one of those.
Well, talking of mugwort, unless there's anything that you needed to add about St. John's wort that we all need to know today.
No, just that, you know, like we said, it can be dangerous. Know what you're doing.
No, I think with any of this, yeah, know what you're doing, know what you're foraging for. With mugwort was one of the, I've mentioned this before on the show, one of the stupid things that I planted in my garden because I'm a, I'm a fool.
Oh no!
Yeah, it's everywhere. It hasn't flowered yet, and I'm thinking, cut it all down before it flowers, and that will potentially. Oh, you're supposed to cut it at the summer solstice anyway for kind of maximum strength. But I haven't just yet. I just kind of let it grow incredibly tall. But it's one of those ones as well where, and I don't know if you knew this, that the older the plant, the more potent the smell.
Yep. So it's got that sagey smell to it, doesn't it? Yeah. So when it's first coming out, it's actually really hard to identify because it can look like other things as well. Because it's not the only one that has that silvery tone underneath the leaf. But as it, as it matures, it gets taller, it gets bigger, just as it's about to seed or flower, it gets really potent and you can actually smell it in heat. You can smell that like sagey smell, which is what I really love.
I really like that smell. One thing I've never done before is created a mugwort bundle.
That's something that I'm actually doing this weekend, actually. That's something that I do most years. I actually have one upstairs that I made last year, too.
And what do you use that for?
I just use it like I would sage. So it's a cleansing. If I'm feeling particularly down or I feel like there's something like negative going on, that's something, you know, is kind of shifting my mood, that's when I'll mainly use it. I use it in ritual too for the full moon because it's associated with Artemis.
What I know it of is its associations as perhaps a mild sedative, a flavoring agent, as in mugwort was used in beers.
It was.
I like for its bitterness, it's like a bittering agent. And I also know it from a spiritual sense of kind of a connection between the veil and a connection between like prophetic dreaming. So in terms of how I would use that,
have you ever used it for dreaming?
No, I haven't. I haven't.
Oh, dude, it's great. It's so good. It's not like you smoke a bowl and then you're like, ooh, I'm so high. And then you dream. Actually, you don't. But with mugwort, it's like a calming sense.
Yes.
Of like, not euphoric, but it's very much like you have some weird ass dreams when you drink mugwort before bed.
I've drunk it in the evening, and we've kind of, you know, smoked up the place with it in the evening, but more just out of interest, you know, with the fact that we've got it growing. And I grew it in the garden this year because I was like, I really want to start getting into using it more from a spiritual sense. I feel that so much of the magical practice that I do is really grounded, full stop, actually. I could just say that it's really grounded. It's very earth-based. It's very, it's not as higher working perhaps or spiritual working. I don't really do much with ancestral work, and I feel like I want to try and connect to that. I want to try and allow my feet off the ground a little bit, so mugwort seemed like the way in for that. But I've still kind of let it grow in the garden. I've done nothing with it because I'm like, I'm too scared.
I would definitely recommend making bundles. Like, I'll take like lavender from the garden and other herbs and like I'll get twine and I'll make bundles out of it, and then that way you have it dried throughout the year and you can use it throughout the years, or just take it and dry the leaves and then put it in a jar for when you want a tea. You know, so, and it's got a lot of history, right? So yeah, you're right, like that there is that like very traditional sense of witchcraft that goes along with mugwort. It's very much, it's one of the most known for, you know, even the Saxons used it, you know, the Anglo-Saxons used it, and it was in their like top five or whatever, top seven, I don't know. But yeah, it is. And it's actually really good as well, from a woman's perspective, because it's actually really good for like the womb, and it's really good for like menstrual cramps and stuff like that. And that's a lot of the time, that's what I'll use it for as well. So yeah, I mean, there's loads you can do with mugwort.
Never
hit it up.
Hit it up.
No, hit it up. Did you know something that I found really interesting that I only learned the other day through Instagram? Thanks, Instagram. that I didn't know was that people actually used to take mugwort and they'd make like a belt with mugwort and they dance around the fire. Yeah, get this, because it was associated with Thor. All right, you got this. Basically that would protect them from evil. So they would like make this belt out of mugwort. Before you know, I was like, well, hey,
I'm gonna make a little mugwort belt and dance around a fire.
You got enough, you could do it.
I do. I should take a picture of just how freaking abundant it is. And it's stupid because, well, another reason why I started growing it was because I was too afraid to pick anything along the river if I got it wrong. I didn't trust myself. So if I buy seed and grow it from seed, I know I've got the right thing.
Yeah, I've done that before. Yeah. I do that a lot, actually.
Regrettable. And when we first got our garden, I grew every kind of potential magical herb that I could possibly think of. And the thing about so many of the magical herbs, they all just grow in the wild. They're all wild, wild grown things that you can find everywhere. And most of them grow far too freaking abundantly. There was a plant I was about to talk about, because I realized we'd mentioned it, but we hadn't thought to talk about it on the show today, and that was yarrow. I know we've mentioned it on the podcast before, but yarrow is starting to bloom. Well done on knowing that Latin ass name.
It's my favorite. It's in my top five. My top five herbs. I have it.
Five go-to.
I have it dried. I have it ground. I have it fresh. It's everywhere. I love yarrow.
Yeah. Do you use the root or the flower or the plant?
The flower and the leaves. The stem's too woody to use generally.
Yeah.
But I dry it and I crush it up.
I like it fresh.
Ooh, yeah, that's fresh fair. In a tea. Yeah, just it is really good in your tea, actually. I just love it. I that's like, I feel like I'm writing a love story about yarrow right now. I fucking love yarrow so much.
Is yarrow one that has any, because there's lots of different types of yarrow. Are there any that will murder you? Murder you dead?
I actually don't know the answer to that. I've never thought of that. Let me think.
You have the yarrow with like, and it looks, the leaves are almost similar to an asparagus plant. They're very thin, but then you also have the miliifolium, which is much larger, broader leaves, which is the one that I would use. But you have...
That's the one I use.
Yeah. You have the other that is kind of more decorative.
I don't actually know. I know that, like, it's toxic to horses in large amounts. Not that we're horses.
there's a horse just listening to the podcast like
like fuck.
Okay, well, I'm not a horse, so it's totally fine.
I think it's fine. I think there's probably some herbs out there or like wild grown weeds and stuff that probably look similar to that aren't it. Yep. It does have that white-headed flower, which could be mistake, like, you know, like, not that anyone's going out thinking that it's, like, poison hemlock, but, like, you know what I mean? Yeah. Like, it is quite, it's got that maybe carroty family kind of vibe, which, by the way, is, poison hemlock is part of the carrot family, which really threw me off when I learned that.
My yarrow has a yellow flower.
Yes, so they can be white, purple, yellow. They've got, like, all sorts of different colors.
And they're all consumable.
They should be, yeah. As long as it's the same variety, yeah.
Yeah, there we go. Learning about yarrow today. And I suppose one thing we didn't mention about mugwort as well was that is another one that if you consume a lot of is incredibly toxic in terms of
I mean, with any herb, you really shouldn't be taking more than a minimal amount. And this is, I say this all the time, and I feel like a broken record at this point on this podcast, but if you're going to start getting into herbalism, you're going to start foraging, for example, or even using any herbs that are considered safe and consumable, you take them in small amounts. If you're having a tea, have a sip of tea, wait half an hour, see how it affects you. If you're using it on your body, like, do a little test patch, because you are, as an individual, are going to have allergies and react to things in different ways. And if you just like chug back a mugwort tea, you might be violently like, you know, vomiting in like 10 minutes. So you really have to be careful with everything.
Yeah. Going back to Achillea millefolium.
Millefolium. It's like a freaking Harry Potter spell.
Achillea millefolium.
Achillea millefolium.
Do you know the origin of the name?
Yeah, Achilles.
Yes.
Go ahead.
It's yours now.
So obviously, like Achilles, we would go into battle, and it's called Achillea. For Achilles, and the reason being is because he would use it to staunch wounds on the battlefield. And so that's what its use is. It stops bleeding, staunches wounds. That's as a powder, or even you can chew it up, put it in a poultice, and it'll stop the bleeding.
Yes. And what I think's quite nice to work with that one in terms of like Achilles, and this is something that I've been kind of thinking of more recently, is like Achilles heel as well, and thinking of like vulnerability, which I always think is really stupid in Greek history, the fact that he got dipped by his ankle, like how stupid, by the way, he got dipped by his
it's so tragic. It's
just, like, I feel like that is like just my life constantly. My life is an Achilles heel, and like, it was just like you would be like, right, dip you in, and then like, oh, I'm gonna dip this side as well. It's like when you're making like a chocolate covered truffle, you don't miss out the bottom part, you know. It's like you do make sure it gets all around. Like how dumb was she?
you should write a thesis on Greek mythology.
I should just be like the Greeks were dumb.
So dumb. Yeah, I could Greek carry on for hours. Maybe we should have a Greeks are dumb podcast episode.
But like, that's often what I quite like about Grecian deities, was just how human they were. I feel like
that's
what's really nice. You know, when you think about like a Christian god and how like he like has all these flaws, but he doesn't. And that's what I quite like about the Greek gods. It's like they were pissed off. They were horny people. They were gross and grotesque.
Sex and death.
Because it's just what humans are like. Just a bunch of sex and death.
I think that's why they were so relatable. Like the Greeks looked up to them so much and coveted them so much, because they were so relatable, you know, and like, they were like, oh, they die too. And oh, they have needs and passions and desires like we do. And I don't know. I identify with that, man.
You identify with a bunch of horny Greeks.
No. Yeah. No. What is this podcast? What is this episode, Roan? What are you talking about?
They're all like this. I kind of like going back to Yarrow, the idea of thinking of vulnerability and working with that in terms of its healing properties, and thinking of healing an element of vulnerability that I have within myself. And that's something I want to work with more this year. That's what I'm moving towards, of in its magical sense, not in its medicinal sense, thinking of aspects perhaps going into shadow work into the darker half of the year, and thinking of working on those areas of vulnerability, those blind spots, those parts of me that I perhaps missed out as I was dipping the rest of myself in the river of, you know,
chocolate fondue.
Yes, as I was dipping myself in chocolate fondue, there's a part of me that has been missed and needs to be chocolatified. And I feel like Yarrow, you know, burning Yarrow whilst thinking of that shadow work might be a nice way to hyper-focus myself on those areas of vulnerability for that healing, and kind of drawing on those healing properties.
I love that. I really love that. I kind of feel you on that. I feel like this year, because of my multiple crises, I feel like I really need to like deep dive and do some more shadow work, and like definitely that's actually a really good idea. I never thought of using Yarrow as a way to do that, but I'm I'm down. I'm downtown with that. I'm up for it.
Like, I told you, didn't I? Like, I took this, but I'm going to say it on the podcast. I took the brave step of being like, I'm going to go for some therapy. Online therapy in the digital age. I'm a millennial. And then the therapist got back to me and were like, this is too complex for us. Please go and see a GP.
Mate, been there. I've freaking been there. And you know what?
Rude.
That's good because you didn't get stuck with someone who was inexperienced and didn't have the qualifications to help you in the area that you need. So yeah, I feel that. But I had it face to face. And then after the third session, my therapist was like, girl, like, I think we need to move on from this. I don't think I'm the right therapist for you. I'm like, well, thank you for being honest with me. Like, I know I'm broken, but thank you.
Your therapist broke up with you.
Yeah, I know.
She's like, it's not me. It's not me, it's you.
Get out of my office.
I was supposed to say, it's not you, it's me. And I said, it's not me, it's you. That's really offensive. Well, thank you for joining me today. I hope you... What are you doing for the rest of the day? What have you got planned?
Absolutely nothing. I am just going to chill out. Drink my coffee.
Yeah.
Out of my Sailor Moon mug.
Nice. I like that mug. I'm going to try and...
Sailor Meow.
I'm going to try and get rid of this chest infection. I can feel it develop. I can actually feel it going from my windpipe into my chest, and I can feel that it's reached my chest. So I need to...
I'll send you some suggestions.
I need to get on that. I'm trying to think what I could possibly use. What's good for a chest infection?
Licorice. Do you have eucalyptus around? Mint.
I mean, I've got fuckloads of mint.
Good. Make a mint tea.
I'm going to make a mint tea.
Get super hot water in your sink, plug it, fill it up, get a towel, put mint over in there and put a towel over your head.
I've got like a bougie humidifier thing that mists.
Do you have essential oils?
I do have essential oils.
I don't want to sound like a white girl Instagram here, but please use your like peppermint or eucalyptus essential oil in the room. That'll loosen up your chest and your nasal cavity.
I have both of those. I will do it.
Good.
For listeners to the show, where are they going to find you?
Instagram, the Obscure Witch. I'm not going to spell it out again for the thousandth time. I'm sure you can find me somewhere in the description or on the website, maybe. Have we done that yet? Am I even there? Do I exist?
On
the podcast.
Yeah.
Spotify.
Maybe.
I think I exist. Anyway, you'll find me. I'm there. you can also find me diving in and out of helping out the ladies on Witchology magazine now. So you can find me over there. Send me a message. Send me a hello. Send me a what's up, bro.
And it's out now. Yes.
Yeah, summer issue's out now. Woo!
I need to buy
now
my.
Go have a look. You can get digital or physical copy.
I'm getting a physical one when I get around to doing it.
Shower. I'll send you a link.
Where can you find me? You can pretty much only find me on Instagram. And even then, people are like, Rowan, what are you doing? Where are you? Talk to us. Best way to get a hold of me is probably through a DM or just comment on something and I make it back to you. I'm not antisocial. I'm just so busy. So that's the best place to get hold of me. And we do also have the Cheese Witch Coven, where cheese witches unite to chat shit about cheese and to eat cheese. And to talk witchcraft. So you can head on over there and join the private Facebook Cheese Witch Coven group and continue conversations about cheese and witchcraft. There you go.
Love it. They don't have Captain Crunch in this country, and it makes me sad.
No, we don't.
I'm sad. You don't even have, I don't know if it's like an Irish thing, but you don't even have like tricks, really, over here. Yeah.
Oh, silly
rabbit tricks are for kids. Yeah.
I'm a lady.
Yeah. but I don't know. Not tricks. What am I thinking of? Lucky Charms. That's what I'm thinking of.
See,
because of the Irishness.
We did have Lucky Charms back in the 90s. They banned Lucky Charms. Well, they didn't ban. Yes, they did ban Lucky Charms in a sense in a sense.
Was that because of the leprechaun, or?
Like, they were like, oh, it's so racist. Exactly. Cultural appropriation. Stop appropriating leprechauns. It got removed from circulation because of EU laws on sugar.
Yeah. If anyone doesn't know, listening to this podcast that doesn't live in the EU and or England, they tax sugar here.
Yeah.
Just so you know.
Yeah, you can get it imported though.
Yeah.
You can get it imported.
It's really expensive though. Oh my god, me and Gawain, my husband. Sorry. Yeah, I would say his name, and people are like, "Who the fuck is that?" me and my husband were in some like convenience stores over here, some like little corner shops or whatever. We'll have American style, I'm using abbreviations, American style foods or whatever that they import. And we were looking the other day, and a box of like American cereal, I can't remember which one it was, it might have been Trix, was like £9. And I was like, that's outrageous. Cause in my head, that's like $17 for a box of cereal. And I was just like, that is outrage. That is outrage.
I love import aisles in supermarkets. I think it's the most hilarious. Like, it's just like there is someone in head office who has decided what a culture is based on their food products, and I think it's the funniest thing ever. Go on.
I was gonna say, have you seen the ones in American Canada that are like the British food section? It's just biscuits and pickle.
That's exactly what I was gonna go for. Like in Taiwan, like it was you know, baked beans. You'd have like baked beans, and one of them was gravy and like a stock cube. I was just like, how are these what? This is British.
It's a whole aisle of Oxo cubes. Like that's the entirety of British culture.
Okay, yeah, I suppose.
The fucking Branson's pickle, like in four different sizes on the shelf, and then at the very bottom, it's just like four different types of English breakfast tea that is like way more expensive than it needs to be. Because we don't really like drink that in Canada.
Yeah,
I find
tea culture really like strange outside of the UK, because I've just grown up with it. I just assumed everyone drinks tea in the same way, and I don't like tea. I don't even like breakfast tea.
Like tea until I moved here, and then now I have to remember, this is something I always say to people, I'm like, you know, like I didn't think moving to England that I would have to like have a little memory bank in my mind of how everyone likes their goddamn tea in this country. Everybody that comes through my door that I make a cup of tea, I don't want to have to ask how many sugars they have in their tea. I just ask them once, that I have to remember, and then they just automatically assume that I know how to make their tea. It's such a weird British culture thing.
Scared. Like making tea is like the. I must admit, I get to the point where I go, I can't make tea, so do it yourself. If you want tea.
It took me years, and now it's really funny. My husband prefers the way I make his English breakfast tea over his mum, who's lived in England her entire life, which I find hilarious.
Guts for garters. Can have ya.
Yeah. So funny. But it's a very much a culture thing. And then in Canada, we don't really drink it. Like we have like Red Rose, which is like mainly Orange Pekoe, like an Orange Pekoe tea is very like an Earl Grey. And then like, I won't even get started on how I drink my Earl Grey, because apparently that's incredibly offensive in this country. So, you know, whatever.
What do you do to the Earl Grey?
I put milk and sugar in it.
Oh. I don't think that's that offensive. I'll let you off.
Oh man, people like it's like when I go into someone's house and they're like, "How many sugars do you have in your tea?" And I'm like, "2," and they're like, "Oh my god!" And I'm like, "All right, whoa, calm down."
I have made a tea for someone who wanted 6 sugars in their tea.
How? That's like diabetes in a cup, my friend.
I say I have made a tea for someone. I just didn't put 6. I like halved each spoonful each time, because
you dip the sugar. You're like, oh yeah, that's enough.
It's disgusting. Why would you do that?
I feel like it reminds me of Men in Black when he's like, sugar water.
Oh my gosh, maybe they were a lizard person. There we go. Jesus. Back to lizard people.
Jeez, every Easter egg of the episode.
What would a Canadian aisle look like in a supermarket? Would it just be maple syrup?
Yeah, probably maple syrup, some of our cereals. I'm trying to think what's very Canadian. Our candy sections, like an O. Henry or like a Coffee Crisp. Those are like my favorite. Yeah, no, of course you haven't. O. Henry's like a big lion bar. And then Coffee Crisp is like a wafer chocolate bar, kind of like a Kit Kat. No, it's not like a Kit Kat. There's no comparison over here for it, but it just tastes like it's a coffee flavored candy bar.
I like that. I'm cool with that.
Yeah, it's great. It's like one of my favorites.
I like the name O. Henry. I feel like it's like O. Henry.
O. Henry. Yeah. Oh, God. And then it's like a Yorkie over here, like where people are like, silly, Yorkies are only for boys or whatever the fuck it was.
That's such a weird campaign. I don't even know, Yorkies, no girls allowed. Like, it was like the no, man's chocolate bar.
What does that mean? Like, well,
see, I think it was because in the 90s, chocolate was really, really marketed. The 80s and 90s was really marketed towards women. And there were, it was all about like women taking time for themselves, having this delicate chocolate treat. And I think Yorkie saw like this gap in the market of like a man who's a builder and all he wants is a nice little chocolatey sugar fix, but he doesn't want to, you know, have the chocolate of a fanny. Like, he wants the chocolate of a penis. Ugh. Like, it was, yeah.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
But also, like, it reminds me of those commercials with Betty White. And it's like, oh, you're not yourself when you haven't had a Snickers. Rest in peace, Betty White. Love you.
Oh, brilliant. So we've descended into from summer solstice all the way into cultural differences and chocolate and gender differences. You know, if you are a man, go out and get yourself a Yorkie. If you're a woman, go out and get yourself a flake, because you can only eat gendered food products.
Flake. I like how you went for a flake there. Like, that's the one thing.
Well, it was always like in the advert, and she'd be like eating and it'd be like flaking over her mouth, and she was like, oh. And it would just,
I didn't grow up here, so I like don't even know the British commercials. No, like, at all.
Oh my god, that's so bad. There's a whole, like, my favorite one, and was the early 2000s. Do you know pot noodle?
Oh, like, yeah, I love pot noodle occasionally. Yeah.
So, like, a pot noodle is essentially a potted noodle snack. And the advert in the 90s, I know it's 2000s, was this guy, and he's at the dinner table with his wife, and they're eating a sandwich together. And she's like, how's the sandwich, dear? And he's like, it's lovely, it's lovely. And then he goes off to the side, and he takes a little phone call, and he's like, I love her. I love Kate so much, but, you know, it just doesn't quite cut it. I need something a little bit filthier, a little bit dirtier. And he's then going down this street of like peep shows and X-rated areas, and he's like, excuse me, do you do pot noodle? And it, like, all the women slap him across the face, and eventually, like, he goes to this other woman, and he's like, and I even think she was from, like, at the time, like, Coronation Street or EastEnders or something, this actress, and he's, you know, he says, do you do pot noodle? And she's like, meet me in the back in 10 minutes. And then they're on the bed, jumping up and down, eating a pot noodle, going like, oh! And the best part is the tagline for pot noodle in the early 2000s was pot noodle, the slag of all snacks.
Oh my god.
Please Google it. Please look it up.
Yeah, for listeners who don't know what slag means, basically slut. So pot noodles, the slut of
snacks. Oh gosh, yeah, slag is a real British term, isn't it?
It's very British.
Yeah, I remember in chemistry learning about the oil cracking process, I think it was, and you have the slag on the top, which is like the bit that kind of like rises to the top. And we, like, in England, that's just brilliant, because in class you're like, well, the slag rises to the top, and like no one could say anything in class because you were being educational.
Oh my god, another British thing that like really gets me is like, I've done a lot of admin work, right? And so it always gets me when someone's like, can you pass me the rubber? And I'm like, excuse me,
the rubber?
Because not the rubber in Canada is a condom.
Yes.
And I'm like, you mean the eraser? Okay. But it's funny because it makes sense, because it rubs out, or, you know, pencil marks. But like,
it does.
Things that I find offensive here aren't offensive, and things that people find offensive in Canada aren't offensive. So it's like really weird. Like fanny pack, bum bag.
Fanny pack. Yes, I wasn't this podcast. I think it was another podcast I was on, telling the story of the fanny pack and the story of the fanny and my friend going over to Florida when she was younger and had And she'd stepped on something and needed a tetanus jab. And the doctor came over and was like, you know, I'm going to give you the injection in your fanny now. And she was the late-year-old just absolutely skitzing out that she was going to get an injection up the foof.
But it was a butt.
There you go. The strange things of cultural differences. That should just be the podcast. Just weird shit we notice.
Dumpster fire.
Ride that dumpster fire like yourself in dumpster fire.
That should be a shirt too.
That's my new shirt though. Yes, that's gonna be our outro. Ride that dumpster fire. That's the new song.
Ride that dumpster fire.
We haven't quite got the beat for it or the
We're not lyrical geniuses.
I think it should be that should be a new podcast. Let's scrap Season of the Witch and just do Ride That Dumpster Fire. Right. I'm down.
Conscious Meatbags.
Conscious Meatbags. I think Conscious Meatbags should be the new podcast name instead.
Yeah, right, literally. Yeah.
And we should get someone to cover Teenage Dirtbag, but with the words Conscious Meatbag.
Conscious Meatbag? 100%.
And that's the intro song. Right.
Yeah.
There we go.
Conscious Meatbag, baby.